Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Thrive in EDU podcast. I am Rochelle Denae Pose. I am very excited because I have a guest with me today. And if you had listened to my most recent episode, I had kind of a little bit of a spoiler that I was going to be talking to somebody, but I did not say who. So hopefully you've been hanging on, waiting to find out. But if you have not subscribed to the podcast, I hope that you will. If you've been listening since I started 5 seasons ago, thank you for continuing to be part of the community. And also, last thing I'll say is if you are not yet subscribed to my blog, head to the blog as well, because I do share a lot of information on there. And so I will drop that in the show notes as well. But since I have a guest today, I want to dive right into the conversation because I'm very excited to talk about what you probably all know is my favorite topic, which is AI, aside from education. But first, I would like to welcome my guest, Thomas Thompson, to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. And I know you. We met this summer officially, had a good conversation. And I'll tell the story now. But I laugh whenever I do sessions about AI because I go through and I check my presentation slides. And then I go and I find out that I have to change one of them, which I won't give which one away yet, because of all the work that you're doing. And I'm like, oh, got to fix that again. But anyway, before we really dive into what we're going to talk about today, just to give a little background, can you share a little bit about yourself, the work that you do, the work that you've done? Like, how did you get to where you are today?
Yes. Well, my name is Thomas Thompson again. I'm a middle school social studies teacher and the co-founder and the chief executive officer at eduaid.ai. Getting here has been a long process, a lot of hard work with a lot of great people. And really, it starts from my second year in the classroom. I was teaching across the hall from my co-founder, Thomas Hummel. We weren't co-founders at the time, just two guys teaching middle school social studies and science, respectively. We shared many conversations, and out of those conversations came a lot of ideas, but not much action. I went to grad school, continued to teach, started teaching closer to home. And then after a few years, Thomas reached back out to me and said, "Hey, I have this idea. I want to know if you want to work on it." And it ended up becoming Eduaid AI, which is really just a platform for teachers to engage with generative AI for instructional design and lesson planning to really mitigate burnouts, save time, build in some new efficiencies, eliminate a lot of friction in the workflow, and just give teachers the tools they need to do their job as best as they can.
Well, I love stories. I love the, you know, how did you get to where you are? And sometimes, you know, I've had conversations with people where it's like a former student and their teacher, and they come up with an idea and it's like, now they got this product out there. And now here you are, you're teaching together. And then years go by and it's like, hey, do you want to work on this? And you're like, why not? And that's awesome. And that is something I don't know that I knew. And I intentionally did not say Eduaid when I introduced you because I wanted to like to have the build up.
Oh, to this well, sorry, story. I gave it away pretty early.
No. But in my last episode, which for those of you that are listening, you know that many of my episodes were just Rochelle talking to and answering her own questions because my podcast started as a way to just basically reflect and share ideas. But I love having guests on my show. But the last episode, I did just a very quick about AI and I shared a couple of different tools and I said, stay tuned because I'm going to have a guest. And so that was my spoiler leading up to our episode today. And so I got your background and just out of curiosity, where are you located?
In Maryland, Annapolis, Maryland specifically.
Okay. And you went to school in what state?
Like high school when I was growing up. Yeah. So I'm from originally outside of Pittsburgh, Newcastle, Pennsylvania. Thomas Hummel, my other co-founder, grew up probably 15 minutes north of me. We never once knew each other, even though we lived again 15 minutes from one another. I moved to Annapolis, started teaching on the eastern shore of Maryland, same as him. And we just kind of came into contact with one another. One of those, wow, small world moments.
Right.
We don't even look that different from one another. A couple of guys with like mustaches that are roughly the same age. So that added to a layer of confusion. We're both named Thomas. There must be something in the water outside of Newcastle, Pennsylvania. In fact, it's Newcastle, Pennsylvania. I wouldn't doubt it.
Oh my gosh. And I was trying to bait you a little bit to say like from around Pittsburgh, because that's where I am. And I was, when we first had talked, I was like, get out. Like we're all from the same area. And, yes. And when I do talk about EduAid, I'm always excited because I'm like, they are from where I'm from. And I just think it's fantastic. And I love the story as well, but, and the humor too, just like the similarities between both of you. So thank you for sharing that. And so, you know, you'd mentioned your role, but specific to your role, because I can't imagine you find any free time in the day, but can you share a little bit about your role, you know, with at EduAid and what your day to day as to that role, what does that look like?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess out of the three of us, so we're a founding team of three people. I'm mostly the generalist, the one who will kind of oversee the general operations of EduAid. That would be like platform design, both UI and instructional design on the tools that we have. The kind of data-based decision-making, looking at our users to figure out, you know, what kind of tools they would like based on their feedback. We source a lot of feedback from our users, implementing different resources, tools, fixing certain little problems that they noticed, you know, and of course, outreach, having conversations like this, just sharing a little bit about EduAid and what it can do for teachers and what it can't do, because there are limitations to generative AI, which I'm sure we'll get into. Tyler, he's our tech back end. He handles all of that. He's a wizard. This site wouldn't be what it is without him and his wealth of knowledge, ability, and skill. And then Thomas, he really collaborates with me in prompting the models and designing instructional resources and, of course, managing communications. That typically starts around usually around 6 a.m. I get up around 5, I go for a run, and then I got to do this until about 7:30. I head over to the classroom, I teach until about 4, and then I come back home. We'll usually cook dinner, and then I'll go back to work until eventually I'm so tired that I go to sleep. And that's kind of day in, day out, but it's very much worth it, right? If a tool like this can make the job of being a teacher easier for people in disadvantaged areas where they may not have access to the same instructional resources, there may be numerous barriers, then that's a job well done. I mean, me not sleeping a few hours is nothing compared to that.
Right. Yeah. And I love that. I mean, I'm going to have to, when I go back, I'm going to write down what you just said there, because that is, people will say, you know, as educators, we are involved in so many different things, and it's not that our day ends at 3 or 4. And it's not that we have the weekends off. Like I just was at a conference on Saturday and the prior Saturday and just joking like, wait a minute, are we supposed to be here? Cause isn't it, you know, Saturday, the weekend's off. Mm-hmm. And we do need to build in time for ourselves because otherwise we're going to burn out. But it's so rewarding when you know that you are working on something and providing something for teachers, for students, that's going to make a difference. It's going to help them. And yeah, if you lose out on a little bit of sleep now and then, as long as it's not a ton of sleep, it is really worth it. And to know that you've had a part in that and to hear, I'm sure, you know, some of the things that you said, like, you know, I was telling you before we actually started chatting that I was in a webinar and it was focused on, you know, ed tech and ed tech startups and companies and innovation, a lot of really great topics. And one of the questions was focused on, you know, what should companies do, basically? And I said, well, it's really important that they engage with the teachers, that they get the feedback, that they have those conversations and collaborate to find out, like, what is it that you need? How can we help you? Okay, now test this out. Did it work? Did it not work? Okay, now we go back to the drawing board. Or, okay, it worked. Can we improve it? And I think that you know, ongoing collaboration and communication is essential. The other component that I love about the work that you do is that you're in the classroom and you know and you connect with all of these different things that educators everywhere are dealing with. And so you continue to try to, you know, provide new resources and new ways for educators to save time, which is huge. And so, you know, I guess diving into, you know, more specifically, because people might say, hey, you know, you keep saying EduAid, you know, what is that? Or maybe people have heard of it and they don't know what sets it apart. But if somebody said to you, hey, you know, you're talking about this, could you tell me a little bit about it? You know, how is it different from something else that I might use?
Yeah. Well, I think it begins by, this was something that my graduate advisor, Dr. Jim Diamond, always said, and I think it's very wise when looking at educational technology. You begin by stripping away all the technology and asking what it is you want to accomplish, or what the, or asking like a specific question. For us, the question is, where do teachers plan? Like, not physically, not the location, but where are all those documents at? Usually it's on Microsoft Word or Google Docs or something like that, which is a very general application that has a wide range of uses, but it's a word processor. And we wouldn't argue that the kind of work teachers do in planning is specialized to their profession. So there is no workflow outside of, say, these Google Docs or Microsoft or Office suites for the teacher in the classroom to plan on. There is no workspace. There's no real single platform with all the tools you would need. You have to jump between many different sites, and that creates a lot of friction. That wastes a lot of time. You're balancing all of these different tabs to get what you need from various places, and that makes your planning more and more inefficient. What Eduate does is, yeah, sure, it uses generative AI, and we'll get into that. But more than that, it's kind of a platform, a single place where you can engage in your lesson planning and instructional design, and you have all the tools you need to do it. Translating lessons, differentiating based on, you know, reading level, or being able to chunk a text into smaller sections, or generate a keywords glossary, or add questions to it. All of these tasks are made much quicker due to the power of generative AI, but having it all in one place and being able to work in a user interface that is designed teacher first, not we have a bunch of other users and teachers might use it, but specifically by teachers for teachers, and having that single platform where they can engage not only with ChatGPT, for example, but with other generative models. That's really the direction that we're going in, is building in multiple models with multiple different tools all on a single platform for teachers to engage in lesson planning.
Well, the way that you just said that last thing right there, I'm going to have to write that one down too, because that's a great description. And yeah, I think about, you know, when I first started to test it out, I was just amazed. I mean, the ease of kind of navigating through it and how it functioned, and just how fast. And like I was telling you earlier, I did a session for teachers in my school, for the high school teachers. And I was just demoing some different things, coming up with different prompts. I usually, by default, I have no idea why I do this, go to photosynthesis for some reason. It's not like I'm a science teacher, but that is always my go-to example for anything related to whatever. And, you know, and I did it by grade level and everything. And just seeing their response and just like watching it on the screen and seeing it generate was awesome. And I even had a conversation with biology teacher today, and it was kind of funny because she had a poster in her room of like photosynthesis. I was like, there it is. But she just said she had no idea of how many different things that she could create without having to go to all of those different spaces. And just that in and of itself, she said, even if she didn't use it every day or only use it a few times, like just the time to save where you don't have to go to all of those spaces, because that, I mean, with anything, you know, and you're in a classroom, it's like, you got 10 different things you got to log into, depending on what you want to create sometimes. And to be able to have one streamlined space that not only creates things, but also you got the language translation components that you're looking at, accessibility, and all of the other functionalities of it. It's just awesome. And I, you know, I hope that more teachers start to, because I think a lot of the conversation has been the worry about ChatGPT and the students using it and AI, but in the past 5 years, there was still that hesitancy, like, is AI going to stick around? I don't know. Should I spend the time learning about it? And now here we are, and everybody, that's all you're hearing about. And people are getting more on board with it. But I think it's starting to shift, and it needs to shift more from like, let's stop the kids from using it, but instead, okay, we know it's here. It's going to continue to be here and impact us in our schools and the kids and people that are in the world of work. So how do we leverage it and understand it? So that's huge. And I know that with all that is offered in EduAid, and the one thing that I mentioned earlier was that whenever I have done my presentations and I'm sharing about it, like one of the first slides I had was like 65 resources. And then I looked at it and I went, I got to change that. It was like 75 resources. Yeah. I'm like, nope, got to change that. And it's like every time I keep checking and it just blows my mind how, you know, it's not that you're just, this is your only thing that you're doing. Like you continue to add more and more and more. And yeah, I don't know when you sleep, which is something that people often ask me. And so looking at, you know, clearly because you continue to add more resources and all of the choices for teachers, I mean, some may feel overwhelmed, like, oh, there's so much, but the layout, the interface, the way that you navigate on it, some of the teachers came to me and said, you know, wow, like when you said over 100 resources, I thought that's too much, but I was able to find like three things that I can use starting tomorrow. And I thought, well, that's great. So for you, you know, I know you are connecting with a lot of different educators from all over the place at this point, but you know, because you're building these different resources, like how are you doing that? Like, are you gathering feedback from certain groups of educators? You know, like what's that process like for you? And then how in turn do you take what you've learned to then go, oh, well, let's add another 15 more to what we have?
Yeah. So the resources come from many different places. A lot of it, of course, is feedback that we just get from people filling out forms on our site saying, would you be able to add this? We take a look at, you know, that resource and ask what instructional goal is it solving for? And if it makes sense, then yeah, of course we'll add it. There's also the, I'm coming across problems in my planning and like, I want to fix it. So I make this thing on EduAid to help solve a problem that I have. Or it comes from a lot of desk research, just kind of reading through the literature base on best practices from research and instructional design or the learning sciences or the cognitive science of learning more broadly, and then taking those best practices we've distilled from the research literature and kind of translating them into different resources. Some of it is actually deleting resources that are on the site, getting rid of things if we found that they don't kind of pass our tests. So the general test we ask first is, would this resource create or improve conditions for learning? That's the first bar. And then would it do one of the following things? Does it do that by helping learners understand new ideas? Can it help learners retain knowledge? Can it help learners apply knowledge? Can it help learners build expertise? Can it be used to motivate learners, measure learning, or optimize feedback? If it checks any of those boxes, the first one and then any of the others, we go with it and we do a lot of testing. So we will kind of go in our API workspace, playground rather, and do some prompting and try to build out a prompt that works for this specific tool. We might look at some other models as well to see maybe if the tool we're looking for performs better on Claude or performs better on GPT 3.5 Turbo or now 4. You know, there was a new OpenAI developer day today that just released a whole different pricing scheme. So we're going to definitely even differentiate our models even further. Then, those are the three main areas where resources would come from. And then also maybe iterating, kind of looking at a resource we have and breaking it into different steps or figuring out what might be complementary to it. A lot of it is whether or not it also fits in our scheme of instructional design, which is you want the broad planning documents and then you want to be able to activate student prior knowledge. So kind of figuring out different resources to do that, engaging students in independent practice, and then moving towards a cooperative learning model, and then of course assessing. And then we're also building out gamification and career and technical, and all of that came from teacher feedback. But the general flow of having a logical sequence and scope of instruction doesn't really change. We try to build that in, like kind of hardwire it, almost direct the teachers who use it into following an instructional practice that, you know, pays close attention to, say, student prior knowledge and gives teachers the tools to scaffold it to present understanding. Because so much of, say, cooperative learning that we find to be ineffective is largely due so because, well, most of the positive effects for cooperative learning arise in specific circumstances with requisite student prior knowledge. And a lot of times there are canned resources or curricula that don't really do a great job of giving teachers the tools. Well, what happens if student prior knowledge isn't at the level I need it to be? Well, you can go to EduAid, find prior knowledge and scaffolding for the specific standard that you're addressing, and then give you actionable steps to scale students up to the level they need to be. That was more than you asked for, sorry.
No, that's like, you can talk about anything. I feel like I say the same thing. I'll be asked a question and I'm like, well, there's all these things I want to tell you about it. So it's all mm-hmm. great information. And, but it gives people insight, because I think often, you know, not every edtech company, edtech startup is designed by educators. Sometimes I've met people where it's been parents and mm-hmm. they've been in the corporate world, business world or something, and they saw a need based on their own kids in the mm-hmm. school system. And they just decided to use their technical knowledge and skills to create something. And, you know, I love learning the why behind it or how you do it. And then that value where teachers know that they're heard, where they say like, you know what, like, this is great, but if only it could do this, like that's mm-hmm. win-win on both sides, because you're learning, you're like, oh, I didn't think about that. And then the teacher is getting what they want. And they're like, oh goodness. I just say like, that just saved me like a half hour, whatever it is yeah. that you're creating. And, you know, the component too, that I like is, you know, for me, you know, when I talk about AI or anything for that matter, related to ed tech, I like to know about a lot of different tools. I may not know everything about everything that's offered, whether it's a resource, organization, or platform, but to find ones that I can say, hey, you know what? You teach fifth grade, no problem. Like, you can use this. You know, you're teaching kindergarten kids. Like, there are resources here available for you. It's not specific to like one content area or grade level. And I have a ton of fun just going through and thinking of like random ideas, like, okay, how does this work, and testing it out. And that is some of the feedback that I got from some of the teachers at different sessions that I've done, where I say like, go ahead and open up a tab. All right, go and, you know, check this out. And they're like, I had no idea that I could create like a lesson plan in, you know, like 10 minutes. Or, yeah. And sometimes it's not the case that like, we want it to do the work for us. Sometimes you're just stuck for an idea. You don't mm-hmm. necessarily know the right format. You need a teaching assistant and you don't actually have a human teaching assistant available. So it's, we had a conversation earlier too. It's like, it's no different than if I say, hey, can we sit down and share ideas? Like, it's an idea, like a thought yeah. partner sometimes too. Exactly. Now, do you want to check it? Yeah. Cause like mm-hmm. not everything is accurate and you want to make it authentic and meaningful to your students or your learners, mm-hmm. whoever you're working with. So by all means, always give me all of the information that you want.
Well, we try to lock teachers into that process to where it'll generate something based on a topic that you input, but even on the topic level, you're enhancing mm-hmm. that a little bit. You can just use a few keywords and then turn it into an actionable objective with the enhance button. And then that adds to the workspace. And then the workspace will give you a pair that you can add on to that. So from the first generation, you start engaging in that, building the sequence of instruction that will help you attain a level of mastery over the objective that you're aiming for.
Right. Yeah. It's So if you're listening now and you have not yet opened up a tab, like, go and do it.
Yeah. They're going to have no idea.
Open it up. I will put all the links and everything in there for you to test it out. But, you know, talking about all of these resources, all that you offer, that all that feedback, I mean, there's just information, everything coming at you. And then I know that it's like, it's not all like, hey, everything's wonderful, because with anything, technology especially, there's challenges that come with it. And mm-hmm. when you factor in the artificial intelligence, of course, you know, that's another huge concern that people have because of what its capabilities are. So, you know, in what you've done, what you know, your experience, like, what are some of those challenges that come whenever you have this tool that you're providing that mm-hmm. has all of these, you know, this generative AI and these AI capabilities?
There are quite a few challenges on different metrics. So one, there's of course the challenge of cost. We wanted to keep EduAid AI as open and as free as long as possible. However, due to, again, the cost of running this for hundreds, thousands of teachers, we've we've had to open up a subscription model. So we now have Eduate Pro. The idea behind this was to cover our costs and fund the future development of Eduate towards this multimodal, so you can actually engage in building multimedia instruction from the ground up, not just text-based stuff that you're limited to with large language models, and engaging teachers with multiple different generative models, so you're not just tied to GPT or Claude or Bard or any one model. You can work with multiple different models to find what works best for you. That was certainly a challenge. The internal discussion about, you know, do we offer some sort of financial relief for those users who we know that are in areas where they could not afford to pay? So we do. We have the Eduate Scholarship Program, which essentially we're granting access to any teacher who reaches out to us and lets us know that they're in kind of financial hardship. We've granted this to teachers working in Pakistan, for example, or Vietnam. A few teachers who, just given their pay and that they're paid on this, they're paid by enrollment in some of the schools, and they have smaller class sizes. They don't have a lot of resources. Kind of being able to grant those is certainly something we were happy to be able to do. And that kind of reaffirms our mission. So yeah, we're covering our costs, but we're also being able to open this up to more and more people. That was certainly a challenge, figuring out how to account for that and still keep the platform as open as we can. The second challenge, of course, is the AI is a rapidly developing space. So it's, how do you continue to offer value to teachers? I think what really sets Eduate apart in that regard is that we position ourselves less as a generative AI company and more as we are a workspace, a workflow for teachers to engage in instructional design that just so happens to be powered with generative AI, because that makes the cost of sourcing materials and experimenting with new methods so much lower than before possible. And then another challenge, I think, is it's less of a challenge than it was in March, strange enough. It's how quick this AI develops, is overcoming, you know, preconceptions about AI and what it does and what it can't do. There are a lot of limitations to the technology that I think become apparent once people begin to wrap their heads around what it's actually doing, right? So a language model taking the input and generating some sort of output about it is limited, of course, to the input content, but more than that, to its training data and the different weights and temperature at which the model is run. It's kind of like an engine that guesses what word will come next in the sentence based on a huge set of training data. So this goes back to some classic philosophical arguments around whether or not that's true understanding or true knowledge. I don't really think that it is, but what I do think it is it's an incredibly valuable tool that, as I've said before on other podcasts, significantly lowers the cost of experimentation for teachers. It makes knowledge cheaper, so to speak, in that you spend less time having to access it and find it, and more time refining it and beginning to ask yourself questions about what that means for you. And I think that is really the value in the hidden costs and challenges, right? There's a Chinese character. It means crisis, and it means danger and opportunity. I think that's pretty much accurate for teachers and generative AI. There are incredible dangers around academic dishonesty, on becoming too reliant on the technology and not doing enough thinking for oneself. But there's also great opportunities that enables us to collaborate with intelligence and knowledge in a way that we couldn't before. And I think there's definitely going to be a need for safeguards. For example, we want to build in this kind of system of checks and balances on Eduate by launching our community, where teachers can kind of check the power of artificial intelligence by working with the collective intelligence of all of our users who are sharing resources. And then you build this community of practice of retaining, revising, remixing, reusing, redistributing various resources created by users and teachers on the site. And then there's conversations and collaboration there that I think will complement the role of the artificial intelligence quite nicely.
Yeah, well, you definitely identified, like I would say, the biggest challenges that are out there. And I mean, the one that's, I mean, the funding of it, of course. I mean, a lot of people will say like, oh, but it was free and then now you have to pay. I mean, to be sustainable, you have to at some point. Otherwise, like you're going to end up saying like, I loved this, but then it disappeared. And it's like, but it disappeared because like it wasn't sustainable because there wasn't the funding. So finding, I mean, that's a challenge too, and is finding that price point of what you're going to have set for educators, knowing that funding can't, you know, budgets, that's always a question that I get is like, well, what do we do if we're limited? And it's like, well, you know, come up with some different suggestions. And then the privacy and security and all of that too, when it comes to it, like there's just, it's just never ending. Like
Oh, well,
all the,
I mean, problems in terms of the technology, of course, around bias and hallucination. I was just talking organizationally. Yes,
yeah.
there are many, many issues there as well. Oh, certainly. Now, I've noticed a lot in hallucinations that you can mitigate some of those concerns by one, breaking down the task that you're looking for into its simplest steps. Again, prompting goes a long way as well, but I think that's becoming less and less of a factor as these models get more and more advanced. And then, I mean, of course, there's this just general the bias in the training data. So that would go around, you know, expanding the training sets and whose voices are heard and left out in those training sets is vitally important as well. But as for the funding piece, I mean, we just really want to remain 100% teacher and user supported. We like being beholden to no one else besides teachers.
I love that. You are dropping some serious gems here that I'm going to have to make sure that I pop into there, because really, like there the things that, some of the things that you have said, like I should be taking notes right now, but I'm just so like captivated by listening to the way that you are explaining it and your ideas and talking through the challenges and like just the whole process of it. So fortunately, I have the recordings. So I can go back and capture some of those.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course. But and as we wind down, you know, so let's say, you know, you're an educator and I'm an educator, and you know that we have like there's the range. You have the early adopters, you have people who are like, I've already been using this for like 3 years before they even created it or something, and everybody in between. But when it comes to Eduaid, what advice would you have for somebody who may look at it and might think, wow, there's like, I don't know where to start because there's so many resources. You know, how do you, and I have my answer, which I'm not going to give my answer, but what advice do you have for somebody who's like, all right, you've sold me, I'm going to go, I'm going to create my account, I'm going to check it out, but like, where do I start?
There's a few places you could start, and I guess it would really depend on what you're looking for. You could add your own materials that you already have. You can click add card to workspace, import your own work, and then manipulate it in a lot of interesting ways. You can differentiate it to meet the needs of the students in front of you. Maybe you've only ever used that one worksheet or that one reading, but now you can have three or four differentiated copies because the time it takes to do that is less than the time it took to make that one copy. There's that answer. But I think maybe the better answer would be to start with something like our lesson seed, which is our most by far our most popular resource, and just put in the objective standard or topic, even just the keywords of what you're going to be teaching next. Hit generate and see how closely the lesson seed will align to what you already have. I've noticed in my experience a lot of teachers like, oh, I'm using that strategy, and it identified it as a good strategy. Once you see that it's identifying things that you would already do in addition to all the things you're not, you begin to feel more comfortable with it. You're like, oh, it's doing what I do, but it's also suggesting these other things, which then enables you to look at different ways of expanding the lesson you're going to do next. But then, if you're limited, if you have no time and you just need a resource quick,
Yeah.
figure out what that resource is. If it's in a form of independent practice or cooperative learning, go to that tab and generate the thing that you need. I mean,
Yeah.
I hope the 100 resources are not daunting. We tried to break it up into like different folders that kind of
Yeah.
make it a little more manageable. That was feedback from, I mean, the guy who taught me everything I know about education. His name's Mr. Claire. He's on our advisory board. He's a great teacher, my social studies teacher from 11th grade. He told me that the if a teacher really needs something that will make a difference in like 10 minutes, that he said, your site is not simple enough. And I was like, okay, that's a challenge. So then I went and found different ways to, you know, how can we get it to 3 clicks, right? To get to something meaningful. And I think we've accomplished that. You could try to break it. If you're like, all right, I'm going to call this guy out on it. That's another way to get introduced to the platform. Try to make something that takes over 4 clicks. I don't think you'll be able to on our site.
Yeah.
What's your answer?
Well, my answer was, it's twofold, depending on what.
Me too. I cheated. I gave 4.
It's okay. Cause I could rarely give just one, but when I first started to use a lot of ed tech in my classroom, it was because I felt a disconnect with my students. And that was in the form of like, they had questions, I wasn't available. So I went to a messaging app, and that kind of led me down this path to bring in different things. But my answer now, I mean, usually when I tell people, I said, just think of the thing that takes most of your time, or think of something that you're just like, I don't even feel like teaching this. Like, I need a new idea, a new way to present this lesson, and use it for that. You know, what is a time consuming task? What is something that you're just like, oh, even I don't want to do this anymore, and just test it out and see what it comes up with. Because
yeah,
I
that's
think
the better
that's,
answer.
Nah. Yeah.
No, that's definitely that I would say. Yeah. You've converted me. People should do that.
Yeah. Just because like, if you know, I mean, one example, when I had to write lesson plans for 5 different courses, and that's, we don't have to do that anymore. We just need our objectives. But every week it was like 15 to 18 pages typed, and it just took forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, were they read? I don't know. And that's what I hear from a lot of teachers. Like, I don't know if you have enough time in your day to read like just one person's 18 pages of lesson plans, let alone like however big your school is. But for a starting teacher, for, you know, creating sub plans, for anything where you're like, I need something to at least start with, that you have that, you know, original draft, and then you can tweak it that, and just to see how quickly it's done and go, well, I guess I can go for that walk, read that book, catch up on Netflix, take that nap, whatever you want in that save time. If you're doing this at home, but if you're in the classroom, then you have more time for students or working with colleagues. And so I don't know. Those are just the ones that I think of, but I also very much liked your answer as well. And that of your, the teacher that you referenced to, the information. So, we've covered a lot. I get super excited to talk about, I mean, anything education, ed tech, especially the AI, but is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners that maybe we didn't cover or that you would like for them to know?
That is,
I know, it's always like the, I don't know. It's a question.
If there's someone listening right now who is interested beyond just EduAid, like what are the broad implications of generative AI in the classroom? A couple of things I would suggest doing. First, Harvard professor, I could be wrong about his university, Ethan Mollick. He has a Substack called One Useful Thing. You should read it. I think it does a great job at evaluating the landscape. Second, if you are interested but don't really understand how generative AI works or how large language models work, first off, you're not alone. Most people, myself included, half the time are like, how is this? And then you get to ask a lot more questions and take a deeper dive. You ask what my daily work looks like. It's me being confused for a period of time, asking a lot of questions, and then having to go find answers. That takes up quite a bit of time. But I would suggest going to Google Cloud Skills Boost. They offer 2 great courses, Introduction on Generative AI. You get the nice badge, of course, totally free. And it gives you a great source list of a bunch of different readings, a short 10-minute video that kind of takes I don't want to say a deep dive, but this nice introductory level that'll be quite serviceable for most people. I would highly suggest looking at both of those resources if you're interested in the space.
Yeah, well, that is good advice. And I will say that I was looking forward to talking to you, but I definitely enjoyed our conversation, not just because the information and learning more about EduAid and the process and all the work that you do, but because of the humor that you brought to it as well. In our chat. And so thank you for your time and for all that you're doing for educators out there, because it really is making a difference, especially when I'm hearing from people like just what a game changer it is to be able to like, wow, well, I got that done in no time at all. And I got like all this free time, or, you know, there's all these choices. And so Again, thank you for being a guest on my podcast, because it's always nice to actually talk to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for everything you do. Tech adoption without professional development is no tech adoption at all. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. And for everybody listening, I will be sure to drop all of the links and information and anything that you need into the notes. But if there's anything that you have questions about, don't hesitate to reach out to them, because they're amazing. And if I can help you with anything, you know how to reach me on all the socials as well. And so that's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe, and we will catch you the next time.